So welcome to C Sharp 6 new language features. My name is Joseph Reynolds. So I'm an independent software consultant. My company's name is InfoCraft. Right now, the majority of my work is for a company called ClearMeasure out of Austin, and I basically work full-time for them as a contractor. We are hiring tech systems. I don't want to steal your thunder, so I'll just leave it at that and say, you know, go to Tech Systems if you're looking for a job. If they can't help you, you're welcome to find me. So my information is at the bottom of all the slides at IDDJoe, infocraft.net. I've got a series of blog posts about all the information you're about to see. I'd love for you to go check out the website or Twitter me. What just happened there? Was it doing something?
That's it. OneDrive is starting.
Well, let's just go ahead and fix that. I had that problem the other day. It apparently is. Oh, look at that. Yeah, I had that problem the other day, and it just kept going throughout the whole...
I guess you're on the fast screen.
Right, probably. Okay, let's try that again. Okay, so anyway, yeah, I'd love for you to go check out the website, check out the blog articles, tell me what you thought. And you're welcome to tweet me as well. What's that?
That doesn't look like you.
Really? You don't see the rays of sunlight coming out of my head right here? So other things I'm involved in, I'm the president of the North Houston .NET user group. I see several of the folks from there here tonight. I've been there since it started. I think I was at the opening user group meeting in like 2008 or something. What's that?
You were.
Yeah.
Because I was there too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Talking about Mappy, as I recall.
Yeah.
I've been a board member since 2011, president starting this year. And we have a great time down there. A little bit smaller group, but we still have a great time. Let's see. I'm a C# MVP. No, now I'm a Visual Studio and Language Developer MVP. That's a lot harder to say, so I'm a C# MVP. I've been a C# MVP since 2013, and I enjoy reading, role-playing games, and long walks on the beach. I mean, spending time with my family. Okay, so let's get into the meat of the presentation. So when we talk about what are the new C# 6 new language features, before we get talking about that, I'd really like to take a step back and say, what is C#? Where have we come from? Where are we going? What are the things that we've introduced into C# since the beginning? So, starting with C# 1, what have we done? What, how have we gotten to where we're at? C# 1, we introduced a new language, right? Microsoft said, okay, we're introducing this new thing called .NET. We're taking Visual Basic and we're doing a whole bunch of new things to make it kind of different. We're bringing a new language that's not really C++, it's not really Java, it's something different, where they threw in a whole bunch of other weird things like languages we don't talk about anymore, like J#. Anybody remember that? But we got this thing called C#. What's that?
What was the original code name for C#?
I don't remember. Okay.
C-O-O-L.
What's that? I heard, okay. So, so we got this new language, C#, C# 1.0. And it came out with .NET 1, .NET 1.1, came out of Visual Studio 2002, and it was actually Visual Studio .NET 2002, because at the time that was differentiating it from Visual Studio 6 with C++ and VB6, right? So it had the basic features that we know and love today, right? If loops, while loops, and for loops, and things like that. It had the basic syntax. Well, C# syntax, but you know what I mean. So it had your features that you know and love today. But then they said, okay, well now we've got C#, we've got this language, now we need to actually start making it useful. Because it was just very, very, old school. It was not there yet. So with C# 2 in .NET 2, they started adding some things to make it useful for programmers. They added things like generics. They added things like partial types. When I got to variants the other day, I did this presentation for the improving office, and Devlin was there, and he says, "Man, I wish they just left variants out, covariance and contravariance out." I said, "Well, you know what? For better or for worse, they put it in, and in certain circumstances, co and contravariance, you know, it's a tool in our tool belt." So they added all these things in there, nullable types, you know, nullable ints, things like that. Again, for better or for worse, it's there. And they added all these things in C-sharp 2, and C-sharp 2 was a huge, dramatic step forward over C-sharp 1. Yeah?
What's the difference between covariance and contravariance?
Not a lot of folks know. So it basically has to do with boxing types in and out of you know, going from, say, a complex type into an object and from an object into a complex type. It has to do with whether the compiler will recognize those kinds of things going in and out of from a complex type down to... So it basically supports polymorphism. It's how the compiler is going to support polymorphism. So until you've got this co and contravariance, it's really hard to call C-sharp even a true object-oriented language, right? Because you've got to be able to do that to support your... support true polymorphism. So it really had to be there. You had to have it there. But again, it's one of those things that some people love to hate. We're beeping over here. I'm not sure what's beeping. Okay. So again, C-sharp 2, giant leap forward, gave us a lot of things. Generics, again, partial types. So, you know, partial forms and things like that. Big things that we needed to move forward in C-sharp. Then we get to 2008, and C-sharp 3 comes along, and we get things like var for implicit variables. I don't mean to leave y'all hanging over here. It's just kind of the way I'm oriented. But we ended up with implicit variables, var. Again, something that pretty well divides programmers right down the middle. You got people who hate to see var and people who love it. Personally, I can't stand it when people say, "Oh, you can't use var in your code base. It's weird," and I just don't understand why people want to leave it out. You got things like object initializers. It makes it much easier to new up an object, right? Auto properties. Again, that's one of those things that once you understand an auto property, once you see an auto property, it's one of those things that's like, why did we not have this back in C-sharp 1? Well, they just didn't have time to put it in there. But auto properties, anonymous types, extension methods, all these things that are in C-sharp 3, it carries us a giant leap forward. Partial methods, that's one of those things, honestly, I think they could have probably left out and we all would have been just fine. Partial classes and partial types, yeah, I'm a little bit iffy on those, but partial methods I think we could have probably just left out. Yeah, yeah.
Partial classes
are basically for WinForms designers to support WinForms.
But it's also a good way to isolate stuff like generated code from custom stuff. Or like I'll do partial classes with my entity framework entities. Right. So all the data oriented properties are in one, and then any extensions or anything else that I want that's not mapped back to the database is in a separate file.
Yeah, but none of those is a good reason to have a partial method.
I have yet to find a good reason to have a partial method. They just confuse me.
Yeah. Now, lambda expressions, that would in C-sharp 3, huge leap forward.
Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine writing in C-sharp without lambda expressions today. What's funny, though, is in 2008, all the way up through probably just a couple of years ago, I know people who, and probably even still today, I know people who don't really get lambda expressions and will struggle to read and write lambda expressions. And even back in 2012, going to user groups, and you would have people come and present and say, "Okay, guys, I know we're all still thinking lambda expressions is what we need to be talking about, but let's take a step back and look at the things that got introduced in C-sharp 2, because we're still having trouble with things like anonymous methods and still having trouble really understanding how that works." And we're still getting usefulness out of that kind of thing. So that just kind of tells you how big of a step forward C sharp 2 and 3 were. So let's take a look now at C sharp 4. With C sharp 4, you kind of see it starts to slow down. We're not getting huge leaps forward in C sharp anymore. They've had huge leaps forward with C sharp 2 and C sharp 3. Now we're starting to slow down, and they're saying, okay, now what do we need to clean up? And so now we're getting dynamic and late binding. So we're getting the dynamic keyword. How many of you have used the dynamic keyword in the past, say, year or so? Like two or three of you? I've used it. I used it a week ago, and that was the first time in like 2 years that I'd used it, and I ripped it out, and I said, I don't really need this here. So it's one of those things where if you use it, you're really glad it's there. If you don't use it, you'll probably go most of your career without using it. And it's just one of those things where it's there if you need it. It's a nice tool to have in the toolbox, but it's not a huge leap forward. Yeah. Yeah, dynamic has some very specific use cases. Interoping with COM is very nice. Interoping with an XML component is very nice. Working with JavaScript libraries is very nice. It's got some very, very specific key use cases. I thought I had a good use case for it, and when I started looking at it, I said, nope, this is not one of those use cases. Named and optional parameters, that on the other hand is really nice. And it's just one of those things, but it again, it wasn't this huge leap forward. It was just a way to clean up overloaded methods. Generic variants is one of those, whatever. And then embedded interop types. Honestly, when I was looking through the history of C Sharp and what all had been brought in with each version, I was like, what the heck is an embedded interop type? I had to look that one up, and I still don't really get what it did. The best I understand it is, if you've got a COM object, you can wrap this interop, embedded interop type around it and make it look like a C sharp object. And that's the best I got out of it. I don't know. I think that this basically released a utility that made it so you didn't have to hand code the interop type. It just kind of inspected the COM object and gave you a wrapper. I don't know. Like I say, it was one of those things where I didn't even know it existed. I think most people don't know it existed. And
how many of us do
interop? Yeah, a little bit. I wrote an Excel interop that arguably is COM interop. I wrote that like last week. Yeah, it sucked. Excel sucks. Okay, so C sharp 5 comes along. And with C sharp 5, you're only going to get two things. You get async, which, huge, it's a big deal, but it's really the only thing C sharp 5 brought to the table. And then you got caller information, which is one of those things that, meh. But async was a big deal. Huge step forward. Yeah. So you see, we kind of drop off. We got huge leaps forward with C sharp 2 and 3. With 4 and 5, they just kind of said, okay, we're going to start releasing a couple of things, and then the rest is just going to be cleanup. Well, what did we get with C sharp 6? C sharp 6 kind of continues this trend, sort of. But what they did with this one was they said, we're going to focus on syntax. And so we're going to get a lot of things. We're going to get a lot of new information. And I'm going to show you the list here in just a minute. But even though it looks like a lot of things, it's really just one big thing. It's syntax cleanup. So let's take a look. So this is the new stuff that you get. I'm going to put this down because I'm about to step behind the computer. So this is what you get. You get a whole bunch of new stuff. So bullet point number one, if you take one thing away today, I want you to take bullet point number one. This is all backwards compatible all the way back to .NET 2. There's one thing, I formattable string or I string formattable, I don't I always get the specific sequence reversed. I think it's I formattable string. That's the only thing that's not backwards compatible, because it's actually part of .NET 4.6. And you can actually take that interface, inject it into your code in .NET 2 or 3 or 5 or .NET 2, 3 or 4, and it'll work just fine. The rest of this stuff I'm going to show you works as far back as .NET 2. Yeah. Yes. All of this is silly compiler tricks. All of this takes the syntax that we're going to look over and compiles it down to the old stuff that I'm also going to show you. It's just easier stuff for you to do. Makes the developer's life easier. Arguably in a couple of places. There's a couple of places that I'm going to say, I'm not even going to bother doing this in my own life. I don't recommend it for you. But we're going to look at that. So, let's get started. Now I'm going to kind of take a backwards, bottom-up approach. So we're actually going to start with the using static and extension methods. And let's actually kind of walk through this list here. So string interpolation, auto property features, those are my two favorites. Expression bodied members, null conditionals, those are pretty awesome. Name of is awesome. The next two I use a little bit. Exception filters I think are really cool in certain circumstances. It's an awesome tool to have in your tool belt. Await, catch, finally blocks, those are great. I don't have a whole lot to say about them, and I'm not going to demonstrate them in code, because other than saying, hey, you can do your awaits and your catch and finally blocks now, I don't have a whole lot to say about that. You know, previously you couldn't, now you can. And what was funny was when we were there watching the demo, or watching the stuff back at Summit, the guys were like, so we thought you couldn't, and it turns out you can. That was about as much as they said about it too. So yeah, that's all I'm going to say about awaits and catch and finally blocks. You can do it now. So let's move on to the cool stuff. Okay, so the using static and using extensions, this to me is a little bit strange. And I'm going to tell you up front, I don't recommend using it all the time. Okay? But the basic idea here is, if you've got a static class that you've got a bunch of static methods in, you just put the static class up in your using directives, and you're good to go. So let's take a look at it and see how it looks in real life. Started Visual Studio, forgot to open up the project. Okay, so that was the static usings.
Can you turn on one of the light backgrounds?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I know, I like the black too, but it doesn't.
No, I almost always remember to turn on the light background, and somehow managed to forget that today. How's the text? Are you able to read it okay?
Turn on the light background, then I'll tell you. Can we turn the house lights down a little bit? Ah, yeah, I can see that.
Okay. Make sure that stays open. All right. So, in the past, if you wanted to do some math operations here, you'd do something like math.pow and do something like that, right? Pretty basic. And you assign that to a variable. Ah, thank you. We're not actually going to run this. I just want you to see the difference here. All right, so the real difference here is that you've got a math.pow versus pow. And the only reason you can do that is because up here in your using, you've got system.math in your using statement. Again, this is one of those things where, okay, this is kind of nice if you've got, maybe you're in the oil industry and you've got a drill bit static class and you're doing things like drill bit dot turn left, drill bit dot turn right. Yeah. Yeah.
If we were dynamically compiling the class on the fly, right?
Yeah.
I forget what API we used, but we were basically generating C-sharp code in memory.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an edge case. There are uses for this. I'm definitely not saying there would never be a use for this. I think it's an edge case, and my concern is if people say, ooh, I can use this all the time, then their code is going to be less readable than it is now, or they're going to end up with keyword conflicts. That's my main concern with it. So use it, just be wary of it. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what this is all about. But again, it's also if you need to be able to expose this to a user to dynamically let somebody type functions in or something like that. Yeah, it's useful. And that's going to be the focus. That's going to be the name of the game for C# 6 is less overhead for the developer, less typing, less keystrokes, more readable code, more maintainability. So that is the usings. And let's see here. Slideshow, where are you? There you are. From Kurt. All right, so the name of operator. This one to me is really cool. If you're doing anything where you're trying to observe a property, so WPF developers, y'all are going to love this. MVC developers, y'all are going to love this. People who are triggering events off of properties, anything like that, y'all are going to love this. So notice that in my first example over here on search text, we're notifying changed off of a string search text. We got a magic string there. In first name, we're notifying property changed, and we're looking for the name of first name. That will resolve the name of first name.
Into a string.
Into a string, yes. So, what's that?
We have to add reflection methods to do the same thing.
Yeah, normally you would have to add reflection, you would have to depend on Unity to provide a reflection method, or something along those lines. ReSharper makes it a little bit easier. It'll try to catch your magic strings for you and notifications, stuff like that. But this just says, hey, look, just use this name of property. It's nice for logging.
So this gives you compile time checking.
Yes.
Not just syntactic checking.
It gives you compile time checking. If you go up there and use ReSharper to change your first name, and it'll go through and change all your first names, and you don't have to worry about it. And it's just awesome. So again, I've got, stop catching. That's gonna be annoying. Okay. So there again, we've got over here. So I've got an iNotify property change that I implemented myself. And so right here, we've got search text. And I decided I wanted to rename him to search my text. And for some reason I said don't search in comments in literals, but he left search text undone. So now that's not going to notify that's not going to notify the property there. But If I changed him to last name, that would then notify the property. So,
whereas ReSharper will find your strings, your contextual strings for you, the built-in tools for doing this refactoring in Visual Studio don't. So this works really, really, really well if you're not a school brat like me and Joe and have ReSharper.
Sorry. Yes. I know that Visual Studio has a lot of the same tools now. My muscle memory is so ingrained.
I know. It's Tony's fault.
Yeah. Okay. So that is the name of operator. And I better... Well, no, it's nothing. Compile time not working. Okay. So now... What's next on here, though? What other cool things have they given us? They gave us a null conditional, also known as the Elvis operator. So with this one, will y'all be able to see? No. So with this one, basically what happened is they said, okay, we've got... There we go. We've got this case here where you've currently got to check this object coming in to see if he's a null. Then you've got to check every property in the object to see if it's null before you can do something with the object, right?
You can eliminate the first one with the guard condition, but yes.
Right. So... Right. But you have to do all these null checking things. So what they basically said is, instead of doing that, let's do something like this. And they call it the Elvis operator. I don't know why, but apparently it's not just C# that calls it the Elvis operator. I had somebody double check me yesterday and say, is this really the Elvis operator? Apparently lots of other languages call it that too. But what's that? Ah, the hair. Okay. So it's a null conditional though, and the Elvis operator says, hey, if current invoice is not null, then give us the table name and append it and do whatever it needs to do. But what if that's also null? So, for instance, over here, if that statement date is also null, then we can use your null coalesce operator and just say, hey, date time dot now dot too short date string. So that's pretty neat. For me, that's one of those things where if it was just that and I had Visual Studio 2015 available to me, I'd be switching over to C# 6 syntax just for that. That's pretty neat. So, just so you can kind of see what it looks like in real life here. So, another case where this is useful, that notification property that I had earlier up here.
What happens if it is null?
So if it is null, you use your null coalesce at the end and you inject whatever you wanted to use instead.
Okay. If you have one.
Right. If it does not have a null coalesce, then yeah, it just skips it.
It skips the entire line or what?
Yeah, it just moves on to the next thing.
So the performance is not going to improve. The same check is going to happen at the compiler level.
Yes. At the compiler level, it turns it into an if statement. Right. Yeah, at the compiler level, it makes it work well. It turns it into that. Okay, so one of the nice things that this gives us is, and I think this this invoke thing is something they actually gave us on top of that, but it basically gives us this ability to say, hey, if the property changed is not null, then go ahead and invoke it. And that's basically just a simplification of this other property change method. So it just kind of makes makes events easier to generate, which is nice. And then, null conditional samples is what we're on. So down here, we've got the old way, and then the new way. Again, it's one of those things that just makes life easier for us. Yep. I'm sorry?
So I'll think that it would confirm that if it is not stupid, and the current voice is not.
Right. Right.
But it is inside the line. So what is actually returning?
So it'll return like an empty it'll return an empty string. So in append line, whatever the default for a string would be, it'll just return a because an append line takes a string, right? So it'll just return whatever the default for that is. Right. So well, let's just pass it in and we'll see. So I actually have a program here. If I knew it up here. Okay, so I'm passing in that. And let's just do a console dot write line. And we'll F9 on there. Make sure that's there. Okay. So let's see what we get. Good questions. Okay, jump into it. All right, so current invoice is null. Table name is null. So string builder. Let's see. Just has nothing at this point. If we went right. Yep, there you go. Comes up with a null.
So that's how you
Right.
So now you can say empty string because it's
empty. Yep.
That's not the same behavior.
Pardon?
That's not the same behavior. You scroll up to your previous method.
Because you're getting a blank line in this case.
Any of that line at all. It's null, right? So this is going to put it.
Right. We can do that. Yeah, it's adding lines. All right, so yeah, you'd have to do your null coalesce there.
So that's actually behaving differently than the previous version, right? Because the previous version wouldn't call the end line at all.
Right. Right.
So it calls the end line, but it just says
with the null, can't you also test your object now too and do the same thing?
Yeah. So, okay, so I definitely need to test this a little bit better, but the idea here is to just make sure you know that the null coalesce provides other ways to check for nulls. Right. 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 So, okay.
So is it fair to say that the return value from the Elvis operator is a null? Is null? Because basically that looks like it's what is happening.
Yes.
It just basically returns null to the if whoever is calling it wants a return value, they'll get null.
Yes.
If the actual object is null.
Right.
Right.
It looks for the context that it's being used in. So if it's like a Boolean value and the error property is not specified, it returns false. If it's in a string, in this case, it returns empty. So it depends what the condition is. The context is being used.
Well, it was returning null. So. So.
So how do we use it in lambda expression?
I'm sorry?
So how do we use it in lambda expression? Let's say I have a collection. I'm just trying to pick some first element.
Mm-hmm.
Using some mylist.first. And in this case, how do you use this nullable option?
Okay, so mylist.first, what?
So first it's going to return null. Let's say the object is not there.
Right.
So again, so how am I going to return this?
So. Okay, so basically what you do is mylist question dot first, and then you do use your null coalesce to give whatever you would want if your first doesn't exist, or if your list doesn't exist. No. I'm sorry. My list is not the thing that's in question, right?
So mylist
dot first question mark dot. And then, right, property. And then, if the first does not exist, then your null coalesce and whatever you want to happen if it doesn't exist. Okay.
Online it says that it returns null.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's what we established. Yep. Okay. Expression bodied members. We got to move a little bit quickly. We spent a little bit longer on that than I meant to. Expression bodied members are good for one line methods and properties, and they're calling them expression bodied member like properties or expression bodied property like members or expression bodied method like members or property like members. They're useful for things that return one statement. They can be more than one line, but you know, like a link expression that has more than one line. I don't recommend things that run for, you know, 50 lines, because that just gets confusing. But what's nice about them is they're just a little bit easier to read. Again, it's all about fewer lines to type, easier maintainability. Can be a little confusing if you try to force it in everywhere. Again, if you've got a link expression that's five where clauses, 10 order by clauses, and a select statement that's populating a 50 property object, I would not recommend it for a expression body member.
I think like the F sharp has the same functionality, right?
This is coming directly from F sharp, and the F sharp guys are telling me that functional language is the way that everything's going. We need to start learning functional language stuff. For better or for worse, C sharp is bringing some of those things in. Nice. So here's some quick facts to know about expression bodied members. It works with methods and properties, things that look like methods and properties. Does not work with constructors or events. I recommend using them sparingly, but don't be afraid of them. So let's take a quick look at some expressions. Okay, so in this particular case, we're getting a birthday from a database. What database, you may ask? I don't care, it's coming from a database. We want to calculate an age based on the birthday. This is an old style property. So we're taking the birthday, we're saying if it's equal to the default date time, just default, right? Then we're going to return the date time now minus, we're going to return zero, right? We have no age because it's the default birthday. Otherwise, we're going to return birthday or date time dot now dot year minus birth date dot year. If we have an expression body, however, we can just say age with expression body takes in a lambda syntax, and we've got birthday equals default date time, and we're checking that to see if it equals the default date time still. I'm going to drop this down so it looks a little nicer. And we're just saying if it does, then return zero, otherwise return date time dot now dot year minus birthday dot year. Yes, Jay? A multi-line lambda, yes, you can do a multi-line lambda. Multi-statement lambda, no.
Okay.
So
they can't do like a multi-statement, right? That's what I meant.
Right. No, right. No more than one semicolon.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So here, and I tried it. I tried it just to see if you could. I did try it, and it won't let you. So here's a method style, and basically what they're saying is the difference between a method style and a property style is whether or not you pass a property or pass a parameter. So notice here, this is a property because it has no parameter. This is a method because it has a parameter. So here's a method, returns a PDF thing. I'm just getting page counts. Here's the expression version of that. So I just use the lambda and say, hey, give me the page count. Again, this is not for stuff where you're doing long, complex things. In this particular case, I had an interface that said that allowed me to get to PDF stuff. This was my my logic that went into the PDF library that I didn't want to expose to my business logic, and got the page count and returned it. It was a one line thing, but I didn't want to expose that PDF library to my business logic. Question. It is a read-only property. Yep, it is a read-only property.
The place where I've seen this being most handy is when you are replacing, or let's say you're trying to pass in to a method, essentially a single statement anonymous function.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good replacement for single statement anonymous functions, where you're just in line, like let's say you're passing to a method, you're passing in a filter function.
Yeah. 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 So there's going to be times where this is super useful like that. There's going to be times where this is just kind of one of those things where you say, eh, okay. And there's going to be times where people use this and they shouldn't. I used it the other day just again to see if I could, and I really shouldn't have. I ended up generating a list for a test, and in order to generate the list, I was populating a series of properties that each had something like 30 members, and I generated like 10 of those properties. I did it with a single return new list of type, and because it was a single statement, I could do it as an expression body, even though it was a stupid expression body, impossible to read. But again, it was one of those things, was like, I wanted to see if I could do it, so I could. So, and then here's calling the expression body, the PDF reader. This is opening it. This is another example of opening the expression body, of calling the expression body. Anyway, yeah. So here's a constructor. Again, I tried to use an expression body with a constructor. Found out you cannot. Constructors are not allowed to be constructor body expression bodies. Neither are events, for what it's worth. I'm sorry, what? You may do it with voids as long as it's only got one statement. The question was, can you do it with a void statement, a void method? As long as it only had one statement, with it doesn't matter if it has a return value or no. Right. Okay, so how much time do I actually have, Jay? How long do I actually get? It's 7:52. Do I only have till 8? Oh, okay, I'm good then. Well, yeah. Okay. So auto property features. I thought I was having to pack all the rest of this into 8 minutes. I was like, I'm never going to do it. Okay. So auto property features. This and string interpolation are my two favorite features. Auto property features actually are a lot of features, but they packed them under this one heading. But the first big one is auto property initialization. So when they brought auto properties into, what did I say it was, C# 2, C# 3, something like that, they basically said, look, you don't have to create backing fields anymore if all you're doing is exposing a public property for some reason. You don't need to do the backing fields. You just don't have to. You still have to have a constructor and somehow inject the property into your class, or create the property in the class, in the constructor, or you have to initialize it somehow, right? With auto property initialization, if you've got a class that's like a DTO, and all you're doing is passing this class back and forth, maybe across domain boundaries or something, you don't have to have that default parameterless constructor anymore. you can say, hey, I don't need it. I'm just going to make up my auto properties. And if I've got some random auto properties that are complex types that have to be initialized in order to be used, I'm going to do it in here in the auto property initialization. I'm personally of the opinion that you don't trust anybody to initialize your properties. You don't trust yourself to do it. You don't trust the consumers of your code to do it. So you ought to always initialize your property. Even if it's a string, an int, I always initialize my properties. So I didn't do it here just because this is sample code, but I always, in production code, I always initialize my properties. So in this particular case, I just kind of threw a GUID in there and said, hey, this is how you do it. Add an equal sign, initialize your GUID. Now, in addition to that, they gave us some other cool things. That is annoying. Let's see if we can hide him. There we go. Okay, so they gave us some other cool things. They made it possible to make immutable auto properties. Basically, they said, let's have getter-only properties. Yes?
One important thing to note is that default there gets executed in every extension.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's safe to make it a list, for example. It's not going to be the same list instance across all of your instances.
Right. Yeah, when it gets compiled down, it basically puts in a default constructor and it still creates a backing field. So basically in the default constructor, it injects this into the backing field.
So you will get a new GUID in this case every single time.
Yep.
Question?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Right. This is a bad example for that. In this particular example, I'm just saying, hey, I want a new GUID every time I create a person. This would be a terrible way to do a person that you're loading from a database. So don't ever do this. This is an example of a service where Joe said, hey, I need to figure out a way to create a GUID quickly. But yeah. If you were to have a service that said, I'm creating a new person where I want to create the GUID in code and then inject him into the database, this would be a way to do it. So it makes immutability easier. They made immutability easier by giving you the ability to create getter-only properties that are auto properties. They also gave us private setters. They also, all the keywords, protected internal. I think they also gave us protected internal, for what it's worth. But they gave us private, protected, internal, all that crap in our setter, in our properties now. Right. Yeah, private setters are the neat one, though. That one's really cool. Read-only getters. This one's kind of neat, though. Let's see. So this one is a read-only getter, and you can actually initialize it in a constructor. But this one's kind of a cool example, though. So basically what we're doing is we're saying, hey, in this case, we actually want a specific constructor. We're taking in a first and last name, and we're going to allow them to get access to a full name. And they can't change that full name. So a lot of what we're doing here is just taking things that would have been normally possible in a normal property with a backing field and making it easier to do. Yes, we would have had a full property with auto properties did not have private setters in previous versions of C#. Okay. Okay. I was under the impression, I didn't think it did, but maybe it did. Okay.
You have to declare the private set.
Exactly. Yeah.
You're not declaring a private set.
Yeah. So in this one, though, you can't get to that setter. You can't get to that setter from outside of the constructor. So that's the difference here. This is specifically a read only. Maybe that's the difference. So let's look at the auto property samples. All right, so I'm not going to spend a lot of time going over my accessing the people there. Mostly just going to kind of look at the auto property itself. So here we got a basic auto property initializer. So this immutability sample is the one that kind of looked interesting to most of y'all. So here the difference is if I had a let's call it a void change the name. Name equals new name. So notice there it cannot be assigned to its read only. So that's the difference here, is that this is accessible from inside a constructor only because it's read only. Whereas public string other name get private set so that one is accessible. And I was under the impression that private set was new, but apparently it's not, so that's okay. Okay, I'll do that.
I think it was C-sharp.
All right, so auto property initializers, I think that's pretty neat. I think the read only is really neat. That's one of those things where, again, I would start using C-sharp 6 features if I had Visual Studio, and I do, I have Visual Studio 2015. If I didn't have Visual Studio 2015 and I had access to it, I would jump over to it. And start using it just for that.
Do I have to have Visual Studio 2015 for use C-Sharp 6?
Yes.
So I cannot use it in 2013?
No. Unfortunately, no. It was, the reason is C-Sharp 6 was written on Roslyn, and Roslyn is, it's baked into Visual Studio 2015. During the early days of Roslyn development, there were some betas released on Visual Studio 2013, but those are all not supported anymore. And there are huge differences since it was released on 2015. Okay, so string interpolation. This is far and away my favorite feature of C-Sharp 6. It's also it's really strange. I've had more people complain about this whenever I introduce it into legacy code. And the complaints are, we don't think it'll work in our code base. Well, I just introduced it. It compiled. It passed all of your build tests, including your continuous integration build tests that are on your servers and compile against .NET 2, .NET 3, all this kind of stuff. It works. And they're like, well, but it uses C-Sharp 6 features. We really don't want that. It's going to be confusing. I don't get it. So this is string interpolation. Please, some of you tell me if any of it's confusing to you. Okay, this to me is the biggest cool thing about C-Sharp 6. So this is the old, well, this is the old and the new way. So string.format, it worked. It was okay. If you have ReSharper, it's better because at least with ReSharper, you can You can hover over the zero and it'll point to person.id or whatever, and hover over zero and it'll point at first name. So at least with ReSharper, you get some clue as to what you're looking at, so that when you're looking at a 500 line XML that's passing in 50 parameters, you have a clue. And Lord help you if you're just doing basic string concatenation where you're plussing and concat, it's awful. As opposed to this, where you just put a dollar sign at the front and put a curly brace around it, and you basically get razor syntax in your C#.
So basically, string.format is obsolete.
Yes. Question.
What do I view on a format?
I'm pardon?
What do I view on a format? Do I format it? Is there a way to format it?
Yeah. You can format it. You can do a two string and pass in your format.
Oh, you have to do it that.
Yeah. You might be able to. I honestly haven't. It does support it? Okay, so it does support it.
Now, can you use the office operator in there too?
Yes. Yes, you can pass in any random bit of code you want in there. I had somebody just to.
Can I do a multi-statement lambda?
Yes. Yes, you can do whatever you want in there. Multi-statement? I don't know. I have not tried multi-statements. I've never tried a multi-statement lambda.
I don't know why you would, but people do know.
That would be interesting.
Huh?
I have done lambda expressions that are fairly. Somebody I will not name has done some really weird stuff in there just to prove that they could, but I've never done multi-statements.
Generally, I don't think you'd want to mutate.
Right? No, probably not. It should be easy stuff to read and understand. That's the whole point. But and it's just one of those things where you could theoretically, but yeah. So this is an example of a very very shortened XML string that was in a string.format, and I had to go find. Stupid laser pointer. You know, you have to find at the bottom of this XML thing all these variables.
I've seen people code like this.
Yeah. I had to. I was forced to code like this because I was working on some load testing, and it was SOAP based load testing. Ugh, drove me nuts. So this is at least a little better. At least you know that the customer number is the parameter you're passing in the middle of all that. Yeah, you can. You can. For some reason, ReSharper reformatted it that way for me, and I didn't catch it until I'd already.
I see.
Yeah. Yeah. So real quick, I'll show you the string interpolation samples I've got there. I think there were a couple other. Oh, and collection initializers. I somehow missed that. That was the other fun piece. Okay, so yeah, basically it's just easier. So like I say, with ReSharper installed, it's at least a little easier with string.format because you click on the zero and it highlights what it's referring to. So that makes life a little better. Of course, now if you're doing this string concatenation crap, that's just insane. That makes nobody's life easier. This, though, is just, that's better. That's
person ID
is a GUID. And it's just going to convert it to a string for you. I can make it an int. Hold on.
Decimal.
We can do that. Ah. What is that? D? Like that? See how often I do decimals. Okay, now what is it? Who does the formats regularly? Seems to work. Okay, so yeah, we'll just kind of assume that that works. All right. The other thing, oh, and there's the yucky stuff that looks a little bit better with. What's that? Except it doesn't, yeah. Okay, so collection initializers. We did get something a little different with collection initializers here. So basically what we're talking about here is dictionaries. But any collection that has an add, basically, they said we're going to make look the same. In the past, dictionaries didn't look like everybody else. So here's what we get now. So notice dictionaries, you can add them, and it looks the same as when you read them. They basically said, hey, let's make this more consistent. As opposed to the old style of adding it where you had the curly braces. Here's the problem. Old school, if you went and said, I'm adding string 1 to key 1, and I'm adding string A to key 1, it would throw up an error. It would say, hey, you can't do that. New style... Wait. Bad old sample. I switched the comments around. Oops. Okay, so this is the new sample. It will not let you do that. This one will let you. So it'll say string 1 is equal to 1. String. What's that? This is calling the indexer, the add method. This is calling the add method. The old way was calling the indexer, and the old way would not let you do it because it was calling the indexer. The add method will let you do it. Am I doing it backwards?
With the indexer, you can override it as many times as you want.
Okay. Okay. So what we end up with, not print people, we want print collections. Okay, so there's the new way, there's the old way, they both work. Here's the bad new way. It adds string A on top of string 1 into the index of 1. And the old way breaks.
So when the old way breaks, what's the exception?
What's that? The bad old way.
Anyway, that old one. You broke me.
There we go. There we go. It is a... Right. There we go. Yep. So, and to get to that point, but it depends on what you're trying to do, if you don't care if it overrides something, maybe you're adding things to your dictionary programmatically, and whatever the input from whatever you're receiving is what you want. Maybe you've got a source of truth database, and whatever that key is, that's the source of truth. Use the new way. You don't care if there's an exception. You don't care if there's a key that gets in, that something gets inputted into two keys, right? The same key twice.
The nice thing about the new syntax is it's really not specific to dictionaries. It's for any object that supports an index.
Yes, any object that supports and exactly. It's not just dictionaries, and it makes it more consistent across the board. That's the key there. Dictionaries were just kind of the odd man out where they didn't support this before. Right. And then it makes it easier to read, or makes it more consistent between reading and writing. And that's the other big thing. And then if you're doing this by hand, here's my biggest piece of advice, I guess. If you're doing something by hand where you're adding things to your index, consider doing it the old way so that if you fat finger something, at least you get that runtime error and you say, oh man, and you go back and fix it. I guess that's my big thing, is because I'm the guy who goes, yeah, you do your unit tests too, but in your unit test, it catches it. Your unit test will presumably catch it, and you go back and fix it. Yeah, exactly.
It depends on what you're trying to do, what your use case is. And as long as you understand what the difference is between the two and you make an intelligent decision, that's kind of the challenging part for some people. Rock on.
Yeah.
But understanding kind of what's going on and kind of what silly compiler tricks are happening behind the scenes, that, like, you know, what the Black Voodoo magic is actually doing, then you can make a more informed decision.
And I think that's really the story behind all of this, the catch behind all of this, is understand the use cases for all of these C sharp tricks that we've seen today. So if we go back and look at the summary here, thanks Jay, you led me right into the summary. You pretty much did. Yeah. So that brings us basically directly to the summary here. There's two features here that I am using and I use in all of my code today: the string interpolation and auto property updates. I don't see any reason not to use that everywhere. String interpolation, it compiles to a string.format. There's absolutely no reason not to use that. Use it everywhere, introduce it into legacy code, rip out your string.formats, use it. Yeah. The string.format, the string interpolation is the one where you put the dollar sign and then you have the bracket inside the string. A curly brace, yeah.
And then you go with the
Yeah. Inject. You want to assign the variable name and put it into the string at the same time? I don't know. I don't know if you can or not. If so, you have
a loop, right? And you want it to display I. Right? And you also want to increment I.
Yeah. I haven't tried it. You might be. Okay. Okay, so you want to do is console.writeLine. Okay, we want a string. An int. Okay. You can actually do that, yes. Okay, you know what? Yes, you can do that. You have to escape it. I'll let you figure that one out on your own.
It's either a backslash or a double bracket.
Okay. Okay. So, string interpolation is awesome. Auto property updates are awesome. Null conditionals, I think, are pretty neat. I need to work over my code a little bit more. Thank you. Expression bodied members, I like them. Limited use, thank you. Limited use. I think don't be afraid of them, but just be careful with them. Name of operator, I think that's awesome. again, it's just one of those things that, why not use it if you're looking for the name of a property? Await and catch and finally block. Again, that's one of those things I didn't show you today. It's just, even the guys at Microsoft were like, you can do it. Okay, let's move on. Exception filters, I didn't show it. Basically, if you're doing your try, catch, finally, you can put a if block on your catch and check for conditions. It's one of those limited use things, probably. I haven't found a really good use for it myself. Yeah, yeah. I've been trying to find a use for it in my own code. Yeah. Yeah.
I think it might be any other third party where the exceptions, let's say, they're flowing to you are not just a little variety, and you have to consider it and fairness should figure it out.
Yep. So there's definitely some use cases for exception filters. I haven't been using it in my own code yet. I think I'll probably hit that use case sooner or later. Using statics, use it with great caution. There are definite use cases for it. I'm not saying don't get it out of your tool belt. I'm just saying it's definitely not the hammer for the world, right? And then collection initializer changes. That's one of those things that you definitely need to be aware of. I think it's definitely very useful, but it's one of those things that definitely changes the way your code functions. So just be careful with how it works. So I think the two, like I say, the biggest takeaway, if you take nothing else away from the presentation, this will work. All of these things work all the way back to .NET 2.0. The only thing that C# brought to the table was that does not work all the way back to .NET 2 is iFormattable String, and that's actually a .NET 4.6 contract. And you can bring iFormattable String with you back to 2.0. And there's a blog post out there. I actually linked to it on my blog, infocraft.net. You're welcome to go there and grab it as well. Yes?
I wonder which one of these features uses that interface.
None of these features uses that interface. In fact, let me jump over here. So if you go to the Roslyn wiki, all of these features and a couple of others that I didn't talk about, because there's a little blurb at the very bottom of the page that says, hey, there's a few other features, but we're not really going to tell you about them because they probably don't matter to you. It's really funny. They're just like, there's some other things we did. Nobody cares about them, not even at Microsoft, really. So we're not going to talk about them. If you find them, let us know. So what's that? Yeah, they're Easter eggs. But yeah, it's the Roslyn wiki is amazing. All of these features were explained in great depth on the Roslyn wiki, and it's awesome. It's a great resource. It's on GitHub. All of this stuff is open source, is on GitHub. It's amazing. InfoCraft is my blog. I'm doing posts on the C# 6 new features. All of my slides, all of my source code is on GitHub. Hit me up on Twitter, IDDJoe, if you need any links or a link to the source, anything like that. And the GitHub site for this presentation is there. It's a GitHub page, a link over to everything. I think that's it. Any questions we didn't talk about during the presentation? Okay. Thank you very much.